Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. We've got a great show for you. We're going to talk about sulfur needs of different crops. So we will definitely get into that all throughout the show today. But if you've got any questions for us or if there's anything else you would like to talk about that's going on in your farm right now, you can call us at 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. So quite often here on the show, we talk about the training that we do with agronomists from around the United States and even up into Canada a little bit. But with that, today I just sent something out about why I hate when people look at soil temperature and that's all they look at when they want to go plant. And here's where I'm going with this. Today, for example, the soil temperature on our farm at 4 inches deep, not 2 inches, not 1 inch, at 4 inches deep is over 50 degrees right now as we speak. Okay, so most people would say, well, you're good to go on planting corn. But what I didn't tell you is this morning, our soil temperature at 4 inches deep was 36 degrees. And most people then, of course, would tell you, oh, you shouldn't be planting for a long time. Well, what's right? I think it's all nonsense. I don't care about the soil temperature. I could not care less what the soil temperature is. As long as my soil is fit to plant and I'm past the first crop insurance date, I feel like, hey, I'm pretty good. Our first crop insurance date for planting in our area is April 10th. I'm going to be just fine. If we go out and plant that day, it's going to be great. But we got to make sure we have good seed treatment. We have good cold germination scores. Otherwise, yeah, I mean, we're going to be in trouble. And then there are other things we can do to pop that seed out of the ground quicker, like use pop-up fertilizer, insecticide, fungicide. But my point here is don't be reading too much into this soil temp thing. That's just one of those old sayings you need to completely put out of your head when we start talking corn and soybeans. What I really care about is, are we at the crop insurance date and is the ground fit to go? So today, talking about the sulfur needs of crops, we'll get into this for a number of different crops, but let me just throw this out here first. So 300 bushel corn needs 45 pounds of sulfur. 45 pounds of sulfur. Darren, that's a lot of sulfur.
And it's still not enough. And here's one of the challenges. We've done a lot of work with sulfur on our farm, and certainly we've highlighted some of those things at the Ag PhD Field Day. And oftentimes we're talking to growers about this as well. You know, what do you think about sulfur? What are you doing on your farm? And so many guys are saying, you know, I put a little more on than what I thought I needed, and I actually got more yield out of that. That sulfur may be one of those yield-limiting factors for a lot of farmers. Because you think about what we used to get from air pollution, think about how our diesel fuel has changed. There are so many things going on that are delivering the result of is less sulfur out in our field. Well, if we aren't getting all that free sulfur, maybe what we actually need through all these studies that have shown, oh, we need 45 pounds, maybe we actually need more because we were getting another 10, 15, 20 pounds for free that now we've got to put out there. So I don't know. I'm not telling you, oh, for sure you have to put more on than that. But I'm just saying you need that at a minimum, absolute minimum.
Yeah, that's what the crop needs. That's what the crop needs. Is the crop going to extract 100% of all the sulfur that's applied? Is it going to extract 100% of all the sulfur that's sitting in the soil? There's no chance in the world that's happening. So you have to have extra. So here are the things that I want to throw out to you. When you start thinking about sulfur, most likely you're going to say, well, if it was that important, Dad or Grandpa would have told me it was that important. Okay, here's why they didn't tell you. Number one, we had way more air pollution years ago than we do today. So we had sulfur raining down from the sky constantly, foliar feeding our crops and putting more into our soil. Okay, so that's one of the things. The next thing is we used to have more organic matter in soil than we have today. In the last 100 years, at least in the United States, soil organic matter levels have dropped. Well, here's what we know about soil organic matter. For every 1% of soil organic matter there is in your soil, in the Midwestern United States at least, we figure about 2 to 3 pounds of sulfur come out of that every year for each 1%. So if you had 5%, that's 10 to 15 pounds. Okay, here's the next thing. sulfur needs, back when Dad or Grandpa was going for 100 bushel corn, well, you only needed 15 pounds. So there wasn't a real big need there. And then the last thing that I want you to think about is just think about how much manure used to get spread compared to what's spread today. Now, in total, there's more manure spread. I get that. But it's much, much, much more concentrated than it used to be. For example, when Darren and I were growing up on the farm, pretty much all our friends were also from the farm. And they all had a little bit of livestock just like we did. Well, today, we have no livestock. Most of these farms that used to be here, they're no longer farming. And the livestock thing has really gotten concentrated to just a few people compared to what it used to be. So when you're not putting sulfur out there in the form of manure, you have a much, much, much higher yield goal. You have a little less organic matter, and you have way less air pollution. There's a big need today for sulfur compared to what there used to be, and the studies are basically proving that out.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of growers go out with ammonium sulfate as a portion of their nitrogen supply, delivering nitrogen in the ammonium form, and then also getting that sulfur out there that they're looking for. And Brian, here's the other thing. From our Ag PhD field day, we've done some pretty crazy high rates of ammonium sulfate, anywhere from a couple hundred pounds, which is probably a fairly normal rate, up to 500 pounds, even 1,000 pounds. We've done some elemental sulfur up to 1,000 pounds per acre at our field day site just to show some different things with adjusting pH. But we've also had some awfully good yields in those spots. I don't think it's just the pH that's leading to the yield. I think in many cases, having that additional sulfur out there has allowed us to stretch for a little bigger yield.
Yeah, and you don't have to get carried away, but I want you to think about this. Sulfur is leachable. The last 2 years, we've had record rainfalls in much of the Midwestern United States and really around North America. So do you have enough sulfur going into this spring? That's what we're going to talk about all throughout our show today. Again, if you'd like to call us, it's 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. Or send us an email, radio@agphd.com. Stick around. We will get to your phone calls coming up next.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy Two Save Three are trademarks owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
We planted early February and have all good emergence. So far, we can't find any condition that the wheels haven't worked. I can just say that.
Closing the seed trench behind the planter is essential to establishing yields in the fall. Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG. Designed and built by a farmer who is tired of seeing poor stands because of uneven emergence, the Germinator is here to give your crop the strong start it needs for maximum yield. For more information, visit us at farmshopmfg.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're talking about sulfur on today's show and the sulfur needs of your crops. We're also taking your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can email us radio@agphd.com as well. We get a number of soil tests and pictures that come in, but also people that don't necessarily want to talk on the radio. They'd rather just lay the whole question out in black and white, and that's totally fine. And you can find us on Twitter too, AgPHDMedia, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. Let's jump to the phone lines. Real happy to have Brent Bruland on with us right now with Environmental Tillage Systems. Brent, thanks for joining us.
Hey, glad to be here.
We get a lot of questions about nutrients and nutrient plans. Guys are starting to get out in the field and getting some things in place. And when we look at strip tillage, that does change a few things, but we do definitely see guys talking about, all right, what about the sulfur and the leachables? If I'm going to be doing strip tillage, what are some of the best ways you've seen growers handle that?
I tell you, it's, you know, from when you and I were kids and we didn't put any sulfur on until today, it's become quite the topic, you know, the fourth element, I guess, NP, K, and S. So we've got, you know, a zone tillage system where we can put that sulfur right down in the zone where the plant can access it right away. Some of it will leach out as, you know, sulfate form and leach down a little farther. So when that plant gets a little older, it can access that as well. But getting it right where that plant needs it, you know, to get kicked off at the beginning of the growing season and then maintaining that throughout the season is pretty important to combat deficiency and crop removal. So
when you look at
soils are deficient now.
Now, Brent, when you look at some of the spring tillage that's going to go on this year, certainly get a lot of questions around spring strip tillage. How would you set up that row unit to try to do the best job with strip till in the spring?
Well, first of all, I think it's probably going to be a blanket statement across the Midwest that we're going to be wet for our tillage, just like we were last spring and the last two falls. So we don't want to do a lot of bringing up of muck from down below. So if you try to run too deep and get fertilizer down deep, you're also going to be pulling up some of that either heavier soil or at least wetter soil and leave a more cloddy planting zone. So definitely don't want to do that. A lighter tillage pass is better. Also don't want to mix a lot of organic matter or residue from the top of the soil down into that zone, so you prevent your good seed soil contact. So, you know, if you have zone cleaners or row cleaners on your strip till rig, it's great to run those and get that trash out of the way so you don't blend it in with the soil.
Yeah, there's a lot of different things that happen in the spring versus in the fall. And I know we're talking, our topic today is sulfur. When we think about nutrients that can leach, we oftentimes want to put those out as close to planting time as we can. So a lot of jobs that need to happen yet on many of these farms. What are you hearing from around the country, Brent? Are some guys getting out in the field and getting started?
I tell you, they get out there for a day or two, and then they have to shut down for a few days, and then they get out there for a day or two, and inevitably, after we have a spring like this and guys have been out there early and battled with the mud and wet conditions, and then they realize, boy, I should have just waited until it was actually fit and I would have got just as much done with less frustration and had a better seed bed the whole time. But you and I both know that it's really hard to sit still when you see the neighbor out in the field.
Yeah. Yeah, cheers. Well, my dad used to do this, and it is April Fool's Day, so I guess I could throw this out. But one of the things that he always thought was fun is when he had the planter ready, he liked to just hook it up to the tractor and drive it around, you know, out in the country a little bit, drive down some gravel roads, past some neighbors that he knew would see him coming by and hear that tractor coming. And, man, that would get the phone ringing right away. What's going on? Is he out planting already? And I think, you know, you bring up a good point. We don't want to push things and get out there too early if the fields aren't fit.
Absolutely. And now that you've got my afternoon planned out for me, I've got to be out with the planter for like 3 hours.
Oh, man. I didn't need to start that trend on April Fool's Day. We're talking with Brent Bruland here with Environmental Tillage Systems. Brent, good luck here this spring. I know there's a lot of work to happen, and just stay safe and have fun.
All right. Thanks a lot.
You bet. Let's head out to Illinois. We've got Tadge Davis with us right now with Mosaic. Tadge, thanks for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. Glad to be here.
All right. We're talking sulfur today, and certainly you get a lot of questions around this, different forms of sulfur, different ways that guys can go. What are you seeing as popular solutions this spring?
Well, I think certainly we want to talk about a little bit about our micro essentials product, but I think when we talk about sulfur, we want to be cognizant that just about any row crop that we have in the Midwest or any crop that we have in the Midwest anymore will respond to some sulfur. And as you mentioned, there are a couple different forms of sulfur. Sulfate sulfur, which is readily available, but as you mentioned with your previous caller, can be leached through the soil profile. And then elemental sulfur, but that elemental sulfur has to be converted over to sulfate sulfur by microbial activity, and that takes time. So at Mosaic, we have an innovative phosphate fertilizer that also has two forms of sulfur and or zinc in the granule to provide season-long sulfur to the crop.
All right, you talk about that. A combination approach for many growers saving a trip over the field is a big deal. What do you see as advantages beyond just saving a trip?
Well, when you look at a crop like corn, and also to some extent with soybeans, but specifically with corn, when you look for the crop's sulfur need, actually about half of the sulfur need comes before tasseling, and about a half comes after tasseling. So you really need to have sulfur available to that crop all season long. So when you have two forms, like we have in Micro Essentials, the sulfate form is available early for that early vegetative growth. And then when you come to grain fill time, which is really the largest need for sulfur in the corn plant, we have that elemental sulfur portion that's going to be starting to become available to that crop as well. And again, if you can provide sulfur to the crop season long, you're going to see a yield advantage.
You make a great point here about that late season availability of sulfur. We got a lot of questions at harvest time last year, guys, that said, man, I ran out of nitrogen and I ran out of sulfur. And some of the guys that had done some sulfur trial work saw some really big gains with those late applications. Is that something on a wet year that we're going to be kind of stuck to do, especially in the lighter soils?
I think so. I think you hit the nail on the head. We're going to see that more with coarser soils or lighter soils. Again, we look at Micro Essentials as a foundational source, but certainly there's other forms of sulfur out there. And if you put on a sulfate form of sulfur, whether that's ammonium sulfate or ammonium thiosulfate, a liquid, anytime you can maybe stagger those, maybe put on some ahead of planting, and then maybe come back with a side dress or over the top application, I think you would see some benefit. Especially in wet soils and or wet year and lighter or coarser soil types.
All right. There are some parts of the country that are a little bit on the dry side. Any different advice for them heading into this year, especially when it comes to sulfur?
I would certainly make sure after you've got your big three NP and K fertility plans in place that you definitely include sulfur. Whether it's a wet year or a dry year, we see that sulfur nutrient being more of a limiting factor than it has been in the past, because as I'm sure you guys have talked about, we get a lot less sulfur in rainfall from the atmosphere as we did 25, 30 years ago. Combine that with higher yields, and we certainly have a need for sulfur fertilizer, whether that's ammonium sulfate, other forms of sulfur, or what we like to promote, of course, two forms of sulfur with Micro Essentials.
Yeah, you mentioned the air pollution. We were chatting about that a little bit earlier, and I personally think some of the sulfur needs of crops are underestimated just because we were getting a bunch of free sulfur that we weren't really giving credit to in our programs in the past.
I think that's probably correct. I was preparing a little bit for this call and looking at what our recommendations are for sulfur, and then was actually on your nutrient removal app and looking at some of the things you had for sulfur, and it looked like maybe you're a little bit on the high side. But I think erring on the side of caution, especially because sulfate sulfur is a mobile nutrient, is a good decision. And I certainly think as yields get higher and higher, we're removing more of all nutrients. We're definitely removing more sulfur, and we need to be able to put that back in the form of fertilizer.
Yep, great advice. Talking with Tadge Davis with Mosaic. Tadge, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
Thank you. Appreciate the time.
Talking sulfur on Ag PhD Radio today. Also taking your calls and agronomic questions. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back after this.
Avoid dry run failures with the new Hypro Force Field Pump. Providing the ultimate protection, this wet seal pump will save you on costly in-season downtime to keep your sprayer running. Now all you have to worry about is the weather. Hypro, helping you spray better.
How much yield did you lose the moment you planted your seed? Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG. Designed and built by a farmer tired of seeing yield loss from poor stands, the Germinator gives your crop the strong start it needs for maximum yield. Visit farmshopmfg.com.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Before it's too late and white mold becomes a problem, you need to ask your seed dealer for Heads Up seed treatment. When raising soybeans in the Midwest, you know the risk of being caught unprepared. As heard on AgPHD, there are several steps you can take prior to planting for a successful management plan against white mold. Compatible and cost-effective season-long protection starts now by asking your seed dealer to apply Heads Up to your 2020 bean seed order. For more information, visit headsupst.com.
Revitec fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitec fungicide, brand new chemistry, three no-excuse modes of action, zero modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitec fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with a Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're talking about the sulfur needs of crops today, but boy, planting season is right around the corner. Lots of things going on. If you have an agronomic question for us, our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. We've got Joe with us out in Virginia. Joe, how are you doing today?
Oh, we're doing pretty good. A little cold today.
What is cold? What is cold for you in Virginia right now?
Oh, it's in the 40s.
Okay, yeah, that's cool. That's cool.
Day before yesterday, it was in the 80s.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's quite a change.
Yeah, it's up and down. Got a couple questions.
Sure.
One, the sulfur. How in the world do you keep enough sulfur on the crop without it leaching? Because sulfur does leach. And to do a high-yield corn requires a quite a bit of sulfur. What's your recommendation on trying to keep it there?
Yeah, it's the same thing as nitrogen. So if you look at, for example, in your state, David Hula's there with the world record corn. Ask him how many ask him how many times he puts nitrogen on. I can just about bet you he puts sulfur on that many times as well. So usually guys who are side dressing or putting nitrogen on some other way, whether it's through irrigation or an applicator, whatever, the point is a lot of times they're putting sulfur right along with the nitrogen. That's how you keep that thing going along. Now, sulfate leaches at roughly, not exactly, but roughly half the rate of nitrate. So it's not as leachable as nitrogen, but it's still pretty leachable.
Okay. My concern is whether I'm going to run out or not, because at some point the corn will reach too tall to get over top of it with a spray rig.
Yep.
And so that's what I was trying to accomplish, okay, to make sure I had enough sulfur on the last pass to make it to the end of the day.
Gotcha. Okay, so here's what we would encourage you to take a look at. Elemental sulfur. if you get at least a little bit of elemental sulfur out there, what happens with that is the elemental sulfur is not leachable. That's got to break down, convert over to sulfate, and that does take a little bit of time. So that's what people will do a lot of times, is they'll have some sulfate and some sulfur together. The sulfur is more of a kind of, let's call it, controlled release type of thing. It's just like with nitrogen. If you put all your nitrogen on in the nitrate form, well, that's available today and it's leachable today. But when you put ammonium on, like for example, ammonium sulfate, nitrogen in the ammonium form is controlled release nitrogen. You can also use nitrogen stabilizers. And I mean, there are other ways to handle the nitrogen thing. Okay. But yeah, the best thing on the sulfur deal, if you say, I'm close, but I can't quite finish it out, I'm worried about it, I'd use a little bit of elemental sulfur along with it, and you got it.
All right. The other question I had is the short day corn. I was talking to one of your agronomists up there, and we had kind of chatted about it, about the 72, 75, 78-day corn. It's not available here. The seed is not available. And when I talked to my local agronomist, of course, he flipped out. Oh, my God, you can't do that. And I said, well, you know, there's a lot of things that you can and can't do. if y'all can grow in that tremendously cold climate that you have, well, we start planting after April 15th around here, typically with corn. Well, hell, it would y'all be running around in shorts.
Yeah, definitely. When we started talking, Joe, just so you know, I looked up what the average growing degree units are in Virginia, and it depends on where you're at in the state, obviously, but a lot of times we're talking somewhere around 4,000 GDUs. So 4,000 GDUs would be roughly double, not quite, but roughly double what we have, and certainly double what somebody in North Dakota would have. Darren, for 75 or 80-day corn, what is it for GDUs? You probably know off the top of your head.
No, I don't off the top of my head. It's down under 2,000, so you've got a shot to raise a couple of crops. Yep. I know just down the road.
Oh, but that's starting planting a little earlier. So GDUs, yeah. I'm figuring March 1 all the way to December 1 in Virginia. Most years you're going to get over 4,000 GDUs. So technically
You can double crop. I know you mentioned David Hula, and I know they've tried that and got it to happen.
He's
so
about an hour from me.
Okay,
he's about an hour east of me. And what I was interested in is if I could get a corn crop in around first or second week of March. Of course, everybody around here says it can't be done. Of course, if that's the case, y'all couldn't grow anything.
Yep.
If I could get a crop in first or second week of March and harvest it first of June and turn around and come back with a crop of beans behind it, I'd be smiling all the way to the bank, hopefully.
Yes.
But I don't know if it's possible.
Yep. It's absolutely possible. So,
well, the other side of that is by harvest time here, it's getting hot. I mean, it's easily 95, 100 degrees. You know, it's not out of the question to have a day like that. And so we talked about maybe possibly using heat shield. We just don't know if the crop is going to mature before it burns up.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of, you bring up a couple of different concepts and something that hopefully could be big changes for your farm. When I think about, well, you mentioned heat shield, that's one we've been using now for a few years, but even the early day maturing corn, it's not like you're thinking, well, 80-day corn's going to beat my 110-day stuff for yield, but if you could do 80-day corn and come back and raise 105-day corn or 100-day corn or maybe still 110-day corn, depending on what kind of year you have, hey, you could get 200-plus bushel corn twice. That would be really, really fun. So anytime you're looking at trying things like that, I always recommend do it on a smaller scale and just make sure it works before you run into a big problem. But, yeah, to do a field or two like that and just see what would happen and try a couple different maturities, I think it'd be a great idea. And, yeah, I agree with you. I think heat shield has some promise, especially in an area like yours where you get pretty darn warm in the middle of the summer.
Well, I'm very worried about it, and this is I'm really sticking my neck out on this thing trying to try it. So what I did is I put 5 acres to the side, and I was wanting to try to get some of this short day corn to stick it. I figured 5 acres wouldn't be no big deal. You know, it'd be easy enough to try it. And so the next question is, where in the world would I get the seed?
I'm assuming that any seed company in the northern United States would love to sell you seed.
Yeah, here's the challenge, Joe, is that last year, we had 2019, and 2019 was a tough planting year, and so a lot of that early day corn got planted in the 90 and 100-day maturities.
He's looking for a few acres. But, it's no big deal. Just call any northern United States seed company. They'll sell you some early day seed.
Yeah, to get a few
Everybody's
bags.
Everybody's telling me they ain't got it.
All right. Well, tell you what, Joe. We'll talk to you off air here. I think I got a couple of leads for you on getting some early day corn. I really appreciate the call today too. Let's head out to Northwest Ohio. We got Terry on with us right now. Terry, how are you doing today?
Doing real good. How about you guys?
We're doing well.
So I hear you got some slugs, Terry.
Yeah. Yes, I do. I guess I'm a little concerned about it. I guess normally we harvest our corn. Go plant cover crop rye into it.
Yep.
And with 2018 being the way it was, you know, we got some fields planted and some not. You know, the rye got 6 foot tall. You know, we planted in it, rolled it down. And now that mat's laying there. Well, I guess I should back up. In the fall, we did plant more rye into some of those fields.
Okay.
Because of, you know, that's what we normally do for the Lake Erie watershed. But, there's slugs underneath that rye right now, and I guess there's several different scenarios of trying to manage them slugs. Some guys talk plant early, you know, try to get ahead of them. Then there's a time period you plant later, you know, after maybe the adolescents don't eat the beans. You know, you hope the beans get planted in the warm, they jump out of the ground. You know, I'm just not quite sure how to deal with them. Or
okay,
the cover crop we got growing now, kill it or wait later.
Yep, you bet. So our advice would probably be, and there are obviously several things you can do, but we will talk quite often about tillage. If you don't want to do tillage, at least burn it off earlier than later. You can go out there and spray a bunch of liquid 28% along with some sulfur. Our topic today is sulfur, ironically, but you put nitrogen and sulfur over the top of them. They don't like it, and many of them die. There are some baits out there. I've never really had guys do that at all. It's usually tillage or burn down early, but preferably tillage. Then go spray some 28% and sulfur on them, and a lot of times that will take care of it.
Okay, you know, that burning down early, I didn't know if that would be good or...
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Terry, we got to take a quick commercial break. Let me come back right after this, and I'll talk to you a little more about that. Stay tuned. This is Ag PhD Radio.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic insecticides from Atticus LLC. Unwanted insects are a nuisance, but they're no match for Serpent from Atticus. Serpent delivers economical, fast-acting, broad-spectrum control to help your corn, soybeans, and wheat crops thrive. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit atticusllc.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop, and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutex EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutex EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutex EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck. How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good. That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new Open Sky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation.
Gooseneck tow package?
Yep.
Discover more Open Sky details at openskyherbicide.com.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Right before the break, we were talking to Terry from out in Northwest Ohio. He has an issue with slugs. And right before the break, and Terry, I apologize, we had to jump into commercial there real quick. But I would just say to your question about you didn't know whether or not burning down early would be good. A lot of times what we're trying to do, if nothing else, is we want to get that soil warmer and we want to get things drier out in the field. And so the longer your cover crop stays there, the wetter it's going to be, and I mean the more moisture it's holding, and then also it's just not going to warm up as quickly. So if we can burn that down sooner rather than later, if you want to stay in no-till or strip-till, something like that, then you're better off. And then the other thing that some people have had at least a little bit of success with is if, let's say, it is no-till, making sure we've got all that residue out of the row. We want to keep residue out, and we want to dry things out as much as we can in the row. That usually means we have fewer slug issues.
Yeah, that does work enough when we plant corn, y'all, because that's on strip tillage. Now, beans run 15-inch rows, and, you know, it's planted right into the mat. And I know some guys will want to burn down early, like what you said, and other ones kind of, well, recommend maybe let it grow, and that way the slugs work on the rye, because it worries me when the beans come out of the ground out of the killed mat, or out of that rye that's killed, you know, that slug's going to see that green bean. It's like, you know, it's the only thing it's got to munch on.
Well, you know,
that's my concern.
Yep, I'm with you 100%. And let's just put it this way. There are sometimes situations in farming where we have to go to plan B. And quite frankly, if it was me, I'd be going to plan B on the soybeans there. I'd either plant corn there where I've got slugs, or I would plant soybeans in 30-inch rows, do my strip till thing. I'd still put down some 28% and sulfur. I'm not doing what I normally do because I've got that slug issue out there. You know, it would be different if we had a bunch of other good control methods, but we don't. And the worst thing that can happen is you say, well, we'll just hope for the best. And hoping for the best doesn't turn out so well. So, I mean, our margins are pretty thin right now on the farm. I wouldn't want to take that chance, and I wouldn't want to advise you to take that chance as your agronomist.
Okay, well, that sounds good. And, you know, hopefully we can get this figured out and get a good plan so they don't eat the crop up coming up.
Yeah, that's for sure. All right, well, good luck, Terry. Thanks for calling in today.
Thank you.
All right, let's head over to Indiana. We've got Jim Camberato with us right now with Purdue. Jim, thanks for joining us today to talk a little about sulfur.
Glad to be with you.
All right, so everybody knows you guys have been getting a little weather over there in Indiana. Talk to us about the spring weather and about moisture and how that impacts sulfur fertilization.
Well, as it seems to be common, it's cold and wet like the past few years. And so we worry about sulfur that was applied in the fall or winter because it's generally as mobile as nitrate. And maybe move down deeper in the profile than we would like. So we have concerns there. And also the cold, wet soils will also limit the amount of sulfur that's mineralized from residues and organic matter. So if we do get an opportunity to plant, there probably won't be much sulfur that has been made available from the soil yet.
you know, the cold, wet weather is something that's fairly predictable. It's going to turn around here at some point. As we look at sulfur, what are you seeing the trends being in your state in terms of elemental sulfur use and different forms and timings of sulfur?
Well, yeah, there's quite an array of practices going on. There's some elemental put out in the fall and winter, some combination products that have both sulfate and elemental. And then a lot of people are using ammonium thiosulfate with liquid nitrogen for corn, either pre-plant or side dress. And then ammonium sulfate is pretty common for soybeans.
Yeah, certainly are a lot of different products for growers to choose from. I know we're finding in different parts of the Corn Belt use rates going up on sulfur. Are you seeing that trend in your state too, especially with some of the high-yielding corn growers?
We're seeing rates anywhere from 10 to 20 pounds of sulfur per acre. In our research, we found, you know, somewhere between 7.5 and 15 for corn has been sufficient. And with soybeans, it's been in the same range.
You know, it's interesting to me. We were talking earlier about just how much sulfur used to be in the air and how we're cleaning things up, and we're seeing a trend of guys applying more pounds than what they normally did. And we still talk to farmers all the time. Well, I don't remember my parents putting on any sulfur, and now we've got to put sulfur on. Is that just it? Is our yield levels, or is it more based on pollution and those kinds of things?
Well, pollution was significant at one time in Indiana, Ohio, parts of Illinois. We probably got 45 pounds of sulfur per acre.
Wow.
Per year, which is several times what a crop will remove. But now, I know in Indiana, we're down to most of the state being less than 4 pounds per acre. And our crops are going to remove 10 and take up 20 for a good corn or soybean crop. So I think it really has is one of the causal factors for there being more sulfur deficiency and a need for more fertilizer sulfur.
You know, you mentioned earlier just split applying and some of the different strategies that growers are doing. Are you finding this to be more common now in the side dress as well, especially on years where we have a little more moisture?
Yes. I mean, side dress for corn, applying sulfur is really fairly inexpensive and convenient by including ammonium thiosulfate in the side dress or even in a starter that's not placed with the seed. Where we see a lot of difficulty, however, is for soybeans and for farmers that use anhydrous as their main source of nitrogen for corn. Then they have generally are going to use a granular sulfate source, and the timing of that application and whether it's going to be lost prior to planting is makes it difficult to decide how to do it.
You know, when you look at nutrients that are short in our crops and things that we're getting yield response out of, certainly sulfur falls into that category for quite a few growers. What are you seeing in your state as nutrients that, you know, this one normally gives us a pretty nice return on investment? Outside of nitrogen, of course, in corn, we know guys are going to put on nitrogen, but are there any nutrients that are kind of missing the boat on that you say, you know, we really aren't getting enough of this out there?
Well, I think we have problems with predicting the need for potassium. So soil testing is impacted by weather factors and analysis and mineralogy. So it's a little difficult to rely 100% on soil test results. And particularly in dry years, we see potassium deficiency where maybe we wouldn't expect it based on the results of our soil analysis. I think phosphorus, we can do a pretty good job. So really it's nitrogen, sulfur, and potassium, and they tend to be the nutrients where soil testing is not particularly helpful.
Yep, I would say the same thing where we farm. The potassium one has been a tricky one for growers too, in addition to sulfur. And sulfur's been one that's certainly been growing in usage, and the response has been pretty nice. Talking to Jim Camberato here with Purdue. Jim, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on, and good luck here heading into this spring.
All right. You too. Thank you very much.
You bet. Thanks. You know, Jim mentioned, Brian, cold and wet. That's pretty predictable for us. We know we're going to have that every year, and fertilizer availability is one of those things we've kind of hit with sulfur. Having some in that sulfate form is nice. Having some elemental out there for later season uptake is kind of good too.
Yeah, absolutely. So we talk often about elemental sulfur here on the show in terms of its ability to lower soil pH. But what we don't cover often enough is that point that, hey, it takes a little bit of time. It's kind of this controlled release form of sulfur. Well, we'll continue talking about sulfur needs of crops right after this on Ag PhD Radio.
Challenging field conditions often make harvest difficult. Can your corn head handle it? The GTS X10 corn head from Agra US is a rugged, cost-effective alternative to heavier, more traditional heads. Constructed of durable yet lightweight aluminum, the X10 puts less strain on your combine without losing harvest effectiveness. And it is 40% lighter than traditional heads, reducing field compaction in those less than ideal conditions. For more information, give us a call at 833-4-AGRA US.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, being able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Wherever you go, whatever you're doing, whenever you want, farm your way with Case IH AFS Connect. Now you can farm, share data, and manage your fleet however, whenever, and wherever you want. Learn more at caseih.com/farmyourway.
Hey, Adam. New drone?
Not just any drone.
I mounted a laser on it to take out weeds.
Look out for that tree.
In the power lines! Oh, it's heading for the house.
There's a simpler way to protect spring wheat from weeds. Perfect Match Herbicide. The broadest spectrum weed and grass control in one product. Learn more at PerfectMatchHerbicide.com. Always read and follow label directions.
The laser.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting from the Morton Studio today, talking about the sulfur needs of crops. We're also taking your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Happy to have Dr. Jerry Willem on with us right now with AgriLiquid. Jerry, thanks for joining us.
Hey, glad to be here.
All right, so where are you at? You working at home? Are you working out in the field now? What's the weather like over in Michigan?
Well, I guess I'll start out by saying this is the first time I've ever talked to you working from home because of all the virus business and everything. I guess we're just trying to keep us going as long as we can. But no, our farm, our research farm, will be open for business. We've already done a few things, done a little bit of tillage. It's been, you know, kind of cold, wet, and rainy all spring, but we did get some oats planted recently and got all our experiments planned and where they're going to go and that sort of thing. So we hope to be planting by the end of this month. I mean, that's everybody's plan, and hopefully we'll be able to stick to the plan this year. But now I am working from home. First time I ever talked to guys from home. It's different, but it's what we got to do, I guess.
Yeah, we got to do what we got to do this year. All right, let's talk about sulfur then a little bit, because I've been chatting about this, how it's wet in a lot of areas, and certainly the need for a split application is there this year.
Yeah, that's kind of, I mean, that's what everybody's been talking about so far, and I guess I would agree. I mean, you got to look at that sulfur level on your soil test, and these days, you know, it's rare to see them. I mean, occasionally you'll see in the high range for some reason, but mostly they're going to be on the low side. I mean, maybe single digits or low teens and that sort of thing is a number that I see a lot on soil tests. And like I've also been said previously, I mean, that's just one of those things you got to look at. I mean, what have we been talking about over the years is kind of to overlook things compared to history. And one of them we talk about a lot is micronutrients, but another one certainly is sulfur. And because of the different characteristics of it being able to move in that, you got to, and the big demand of it, and the fact that we don't have a lot in the soil, multiple applications is kind of the way to go. If you're able to put some on with multiple trips, like I like to get some, like the product you mentioned, also gypsum and that sort of thing, you can put on the soil. But we have an Inferro sulfur source at Enhance. It's 9% sulfur, and we've seen nice yield responses with a couple quarts of that in furrow. And then off the seed, a product like ATS or our Access works well, you know, like as an off the seed 2x2 or running, you know, in strip till or something like that. But then also with your nitrogen and citrus. So those multiple applications is kind of the way to go.
All right. You've got a lot of different technology that you get to work with. And I know when you talk about some of these sulfur products, I have experience using those, the ones that you talked about. Access is a little bit different. What do you do different there, and what should growers know about that?
Well, Access, I guess, as a comparison, would be kind of a version of ammonium thiosulfate, but it's a much cleaner sulfate product. Plus, it has some key micronutrients that are part of Access. It's got some zinc and manganese and iron in it, all chlorophyll building and you know, critical micronutrients that go along with it. And so the idea is not to not be short on something. And so plants can use micronutrients all season long, and they do kind of accelerate the usability of the sulfur, so that puts some micronutrients in there. And then put it in with nitrogen. You know, we often hear about nitrogen sulfur ratios. I mean, I guess I'm not real big on trying to perfectly match up a ratio, because your soil's not always going to be at a steady rate. But try to put on, you know, the elements that you need. But we do know that you do get the nitrogen to work better and yield better when you have sulfur with the nitrogen.
Yeah, we've certainly seen that when we're short on sulfur, we can just keep pouring the N to it, not getting the gains. But we see so often where farmers look and see yellowish corn and just assume, well, it must be nitrogen, and head on out there with the nitrogen application only to be disappointed. With the sulfur, adding it with the nitrogen, we seem to be getting more consistent results. And you kind of mentioned some other micros that go along with that. I think we're starting to see more growers pay attention to that on nitrogen. Now we need to be looking at that with sulfur as well, that, hey, we got to have that micronutrient in place as well to help this work.
Yep, they're always going to be needing something. We just can't be leaving something out, particularly, you know, when we're spending money on one fertilizer. We want to make sure it works by making sure that the plant responds to it. They often won't respond to it if they're short on something else, and so we try to balance everything out.
Hey, Jerry, one last question for you. And I know a lot of times growers will get focused on a nutrient like zinc and say, well, that's important for corn. And maybe with sulfur, there'd be some growers that say, well, that's my corn or my wheat rotation. I want to make sure I have my sulfur in there. But I know sulfur really impacts flavor in a lot of vegetables, and certainly is a required nutrient for all crops, as far as I'm aware. Do you see other crops where sulfur is being really, really important for?
Yeah, there are because of the output of the particular crop, like you mentioned, like oil seed crops, sulfur is really important for making the oil, like flax oil or canola oil or something like that. So that's why, you know, everybody that's growing canola should know that they're going to need some extra sulfur in those other oil seed crops. And then what's one of the things that sulfur does? It goes into the makeup of a couple of important amino acids. And what do amino acids do? They make protein. And so how do we judge alfalfa? It's often on protein. Or even wheat, you know, we get bonuses in a lot of parts of the country for protein. And so, you know, sulfur goes to that. So there are crops, every crop's going to need it, but there are crops that are going to need it maybe a little bit more. And so you do have to make sure that you add that for a specific crop.
Been talking with Jerry Willem here with AgroLiquid. And Jerry, for the first time talking working from home, and it's been kind of an unusual year for sure. So we're really excited to see you get back out in the field and get doing some more research work again real soon. Thanks for being on, Jerry. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, I was glad to talk to you guys. See ya.
You bet. All right, get a question here in the Ag PhD mailbag. Let's dive into that.
It's the mailbag.
Okay, so Geronimo called just a little bit earlier in the show. He's from Indiana, and he said, I'm using your 3-pre program on beans. And by the way, for those of you who don't know, we talk about this all the time. We're big believers in putting a yellow out there, Metribuzin, and a PPO, either Valor or Authority. But anyway, he said, post, I want to go with Extendamax, and I'm adding Clethodim for the grass control, or volunteer corn control. I would like to add Zidua for residual. How much can I add, and how big can the beans be? Well, you don't want the beans real big. We want to get out there as early as possible. That's the first thing. Second thing is we got to take a look at what's labeled with Extend, and you can go to extendamaxapplicationrequirements.com and see all the different products that actually are labeled. Some are not, but Zidua is labeled. Also, I would tell you a cheaper way to get Zidua would be Anthemax. That's going to have Zidua, basically rate for rate to Zidua SC. But then also you get some Cadet in there, and Cadet would be another PPO similar to Flexstar. So that would be one way to go. A lot of people are throwing out Warrant this year since they're doing Extendamax, because the Warrant will end up being about half the price of what Zidua is with all the Bayer rebates. But anyway, you want to do that real early. And I will tell you this. On our own farm, what we have done is, if we want to go with any of those early post-residuals, we do those by themselves. So let's call it, I shouldn't say by themselves, but let's say we do an Anthemax or we do a Warrant Ultra, which is Warrant plus Flexstar. We'll do that early. Then we'll come back a couple, 3 weeks later with the Extendamax or Ingenia. We, a lot of times, will try to spray the Extendamax or Ingenia all by itself. We have just found when it's sprayed all by itself, you have fewer concerns in terms of the volatility and drift. You still have to be real, real, real focused on it, but I prefer to do it that way. But like I say, with Extendamax, Warrant's labeled, Anthemax is labeled, Zidua is labeled. You can do that. Just try to be out there early, because then you'll get a lot more out of your early post-residual.
All right, thanks for that question. I get one from Jacob here, and he is in Eastern Illinois. He said, I'm wondering if I could put a half a pound of actual boron in my 2x2. Would that be too much for my corn? Our soil test levels are down around 0.2 to 0.3.
Well, it's not too much in total for the corn, but what I worry about is, will it be enough to burn off the root right there? If you've got high levels of calcium in a heavy soil, it's probably not horrible, but it's quite a bit in a very, very tiny little area. So I would probably only go that high rate on a little bit and make sure I'm not burning some roots off. But
we oftentimes would put that out in a broadcast, much safer way to do it. And when
or
you
even
think
a band over the row for just half a pound, something different than that all in one spot.
We think about leachables like boron, sulfur, and nitrogen. We don't get as much gain from banding those, so we're oftentimes just broadcasting for safety as well. Thanks for the question. Really appreciate that. And thanks to you for listening today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.